So the Bible is a trophy case of God's grace. You think about Saul of Tarsus, public enemy number one of Christians. The preacher didn't even want to go teach him when God said, go to Ananias, go over to teach Saul of Tarsus. Acts 9, but God said, he is a chosen vessel unto me. And he left Jerusalem on a trip to arrest Christians, and then he became a Christian. And he began the rest of his life in a foreign country, Syria, Damascus of Syria. And there are three chapters in the Bible that highlight his conversion, Acts 9, Acts 22, Acts 26. Trophy case of grace. You think about those Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 6, 9 through 11. He lists some very embarrassing sins, some horrible sins, and he says, such were some of you, but you're washed, you're sanctified, you're justified in the name of the Lord Jesus, because now they were no longer what they had been. They were something else. What was the difference? God's grace. The preachers had made it known to them how to come into God's grace. They had accepted God's terms, and now they will be in heaven with us. What a joy. Now, Ephesians 2, 8 to 10 is about the grace of God. If you just had one passage in the Bible to go to about grace, this would probably be the one. And it says, for by grace are you saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. It is the gift of God. That's verse 8. Verse 9, not of works, lest any man should boast, for we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus unto good works. Ephesians 2 gives us 3 points about grace. What God does for us, that's the first part, for by grace are you saved. And then what God does in us, we are his workmanship, he's working on us. And then what God does through us, unto good works. So what he does for us, what he does in us, what he does through us. And this session is going to be what God does through us. So the early church sent out missionaries, and they came back and they made reports of what God had done through them, Acts 14, 27. And don't you know that was encouraging for those brethren to hear these missionaries, Paul, Barnabas, Silas, come back and say, there were conversions here, we established a new church there, and we carried the gospel over into a new area, a new continent in Philippi. How encouraging that was. And tonight's lesson is going to be, this part is going to be like that. Just some places that I have been, that's nothing to do with me. I just happen to be blessed to go there to preach and observe these things among God's people, what God's people are doing all over. Let's just start in California and we'll work our way back. I was in California a few years ago, went to a congregation, a small congregation. They probably had about 50 members. And we got there just about the time the Wednesday night service started. The meeting would start Sunday. My daughter was with me, so we were going to do some sightseeing for a couple of days there. I got there and I sat down, and there was a man teaching the Bible class, and I thought he was the preacher. But they didn't have a preacher. And he taught one of the best Bible classes I've sat in. And I thought, this guy really knows his stuff. And after it was over, I found out he's just a member there. And that church hadn't had a preacher for a couple of years. There are 5 men in the church, each one taking a turn, getting up and preaching on a Sunday. And I tell you, they were on fire, and they were ready to bring in a preacher, but they were making do until they could find one. I think, don't we all need to do that? Pitch in and help. And if the congregation needs to be fed, then we will get up and feed. We will do our part. We will study. That was encouraging. Another place in California. This is a greater San Francisco area. There's a church that I guess is as far west as you could go in our country, in Pacifica. Lovely people. That's the most diverse congregation that I have been to. There are Pacific Islanders, Japanese, Chinese, black, white, just about any nationality or ethnicity is in that congregation. It was so encouraging. And I tell you, they were the first church that I had ever been to that did church eat church, you know. I really like the schedule here best of all that I found, where you do all of it before lunch. I think that's the way to go on a Sunday if you're going to change from... I'm a traditional guy, you know, so 6 p.m., that's good for me. Because people go home and say, take a nap, and they come back and they're ready to listen to another sermon, you know. So, but if you do it all in the morning, everybody's good. That 2:30 service or 1:30 service, sometimes you got to preach real loud to keep everybody awake in that service. But that's the first place that I had been that did this. I said all that just to say they would all bring their lunch and sit together. And I just sat, well, I was in the foyer and they were in the fellowship area. And I just listened to the different dialects, different way of pronouncing things, and the laughter and the joy, and the children were back in other classes, and they were doing their own games and things. I thought, this sounds like God's people. This is the way it's supposed to be. You know, Acts 10, 34, 35, Romans 2, 11, James 2:1-4. It was so encouraging. Went to Alaska. Preached in Fairbanks, Northern Lights Church of Christ. That's the farthest congregation of Churches of Christ in the United States. And, you know, preachers like to stay when the sermon is over, you know, just about. I always like to try to be the last one. Well, this congregation was unusual. I was the first one to leave, and I wouldn't leave a night before 45 minutes after it was over. Because they were so... I was younger then, but I felt old because the congregation was about 50% children under 15 years of age, and it was a good-sized church, over 100 people. The families had a lot of children, and the singing, I sang as loud as I could sing, but I couldn't hear myself. That's the best kind of singing right there. They love to sing. And they had a young man who was studying music at the University of Alaska that was leading their singing. And you could just see in his face how much he loved to lead God's people in singing. It was wonderful. Let me give you another one. This one's in Alabama. I'll bounce around a little bit. This one is a house-to-house story or episode or activity. House to House just goes out, as you know, to, it's called Saturation Mailings, every house on a mailing route. So, of course, it's the sowing principle. Seeds just fall, some fall on good ground, some on thorny, some stony, and so forth, you know, just like Matthew 13. Well, this is northern Alabama. It went to a rich person's house. And whoever got the mail that day just threw it away. It was on top of the garbage, in the garbage can. The housekeeper that this rich family hired to clean their house for them came in. And she was doing her work, and she saw it on top of the garbage. She wasn't on a route that received it. She wouldn't have gotten it. But she took that home with her, and she read it. And Sunday, she walked over a mile to where God's people were meeting. They set up a Bible study with her. She's your sister in Christ now. So, from the trash to heaven, you see how God can get His Word into people's hands that need it. Of course, she didn't have to walk home. They gave her a ride home. I was in Jefferson City, Tennessee in a meeting. And the preacher, it was a small congregation. Well, it had been a really small congregation. They were going to close their doors. They had gotten down to about a dozen or 15 members. And they had met on a Sunday afternoon. The men had met to discuss what they should do. But an item on the agenda was that someone had contacted them, a Hispanic brother, and asked if they could use the building to have a service. That they had a Hispanic congregation in the same town that it was just getting started. Well, they talked about it, and they checked out the brother and made sure it was sound in teaching, and it was. And so the preacher, I think his name was Phil, called him back and said, we'd like to talk with you, meet with you. So they met, and they told him that they could not use their building at a different time. But they wanted them to worship with them at the same time. And they were so happy. And it was probably a year or so, maybe 2 years, when I was preaching a meeting there. And I've only been in one service like this that I remember where it was bilingual. And so we had two prayers at the Lord's Supper, one in Spanish and one in English. In the Bible class, it was only all the English speakers were in the auditorium, and the fellowship hall was in Spanish. Spanish speakers back there. Everybody came back together to worship. And they had the Spanish translator. I guess it was the same preacher probably. But he sat in the sound booth, and different members that only spoke Spanish had an earpiece. And he was translating on the fly into a microphone that only they could hear. And so they were able to participate in the service, in the sermon, but they had different prayers. It was so beautiful. And the singing, oh, so beautiful, in two languages praising God at the same time. And now that church is growing. That church, I guess I said it was probably 2 years later. I think they probably had 100, maybe 80 to 100 by this time. So they were going from almost closing the doors to the love of Christ opening the doors to another group of Christians. And then God blessed them. Let's see where to go next. Let's go to Kentucky. I have held several meetings there in congregation that was in the same boat. They were going to close their doors. And there was a man who was not a preacher, and he worked with the postal service, but he was reaching retirement. And he had an interest. I don't know if he had grown up in that congregation or if his sister attended there, but there was some connection. And he and his wife talked it over, and they decided that when he retired, they were going to move to that community and try to help that church get back on their feet. And that's exactly what happened. They were able to hire a preacher before too long, and now they have probably 45 or 50 members. Loving congregation. They sit out house to house, and they had a homeless man that got it. I don't really know how he got it. But anyway, he contacted them, and he was there during the gospel meeting. Such a sweet man, older fellow. You've never seen a group of Christians love on somebody like they love that man. It's just wonderful to see. It's John 13:33 exemplified. And I talked to the preacher about it. He said, yeah, we bought him clothes, we got him a place to live. And it's just beautiful to see Christianity. Let's go to Texas. A lot of good stories come out of Texas. Let's start. That story that I told you the other night about the preacher that didn't want to move, but the elders agreed that they would do Bible studies every week if he would come there. Let me finish that story. So that congregation, and this is from the preacher, he said one reason he went there is because they were left-leaning. Their doctrine was not, it was a little shaky. And he decided that where he was on solid footing, they could get another preacher, and they did, and the next preacher also baptized right under 200 in the next 10 years, so they did well. But he decided to take this to try to help solidify the faith and build the congregation. And I mentioned that I have been there, and that congregation is on solid doctrinal footing. They've grown to, I just noticed today, 700 members. They built a new building. We had a PTP Spark there. We've had a couple here in Jacksonville. We had one out. We've had one. We're going to have another one. They did a marvelous job with it. They don't have a fellowship hall. They have a world evangelism hall. they use it for other purposes, but that's what they call it because they're so evangelistic. It's encouraging to go there. That preacher's now retired, and they've hired another. If I told you his name, you'd know this preacher, one of our best, and he's preaching there now. How encouraging to see that, you know, sometimes we can get a little bit off, but by God's grace, we can come back where God wants us to be. Let's think about, let's go to Mississippi. I've got a good friend that preaches in Mississippi. God is working a work in this place. It's amazing. It's the one I told you they took down the board because they don't even know how many are attending. The building's full. They need to build. I don't know why they haven't started building, but they need to build. But they have a Bible study going on. Well, I need to back up a little bit. So they are the only church in their region that is allowed to, they've got to deal with the government because they were so active in social causes and helping people that anybody that comes needing help is sent to them. And then they do the interview process and all that. But they require that a person have attend a Sunday service and study three Bible studies with them in order to qualify to help. And they got Bible studies there. They got people that were converted doing Bible studies. It's amazing. They received the governor's award for an after-school program a few years ago where they take the young men primarily into vocational training because the preacher used to be a machinist. He worked for government. He's real skilled in working with his hands. And so he brings them in. He shows them how to work a drill press and all different kinds of machinery. Teach them hands-on skills. And then they have a Bible study and a devotional. They bring their parents. They invite their parents to come. And they come. And they come to the services on Sunday. And a lot of baptisms have taken place out of that program. Oh, there's so many stories. Let me tell you about, I was preaching in Missouri. And I was doing evangelism, something like what, not what we've done this week, but something like it. And I remember that talking to him about converting homeless people and drug addicts. And I was going to make a point about that. So I texted him and said, how many former homeless people or drug addicts did you have in attendance Sunday, just Sunday before? And he said, let me think about it. And maybe 10 minutes later, he texted back. And he said, I think there were 15 that were there. And he told me this story, not on by text, but later, that one of his elders had just gone to Texas and worked out a deal with another congregation because they were having a problem. They were bringing, and if you've worked with drug addicts, which we did at Jacksonville, Simon, this is typical. The problem is that when they get out of prison or they get off drugs, they get back with their same old friends, and then they get pulled back in. You know, so it's hard. So they were having that problem. So they worked out a deal because there was a church in Texas that had a drug rehab program, like a six-month program. So they were having trouble in the Texas church in the congregation accepting their graduates. I'm a little ashamed to say that, but that's what he said. It's like, well, you know, we don't know if we could trust, you know. Okay, they got some growing to do, but that was the problem for them. So he went out there and told them, we don't have any problem with that. Our congregation is used to it. We welcome, you know, there's no problem here. A lot of us have been there, and it's not a problem. So they worked out a deal that when they converted someone who had been on drugs, sometimes on the street, and needed to get cleaned up, they send them to Texas to go to their six-month school. And whenever somebody graduates, they send them back to Mississippi to be a member of their congregation. It just worked out perfectly. Let's see. Let's go back to Texas. I'm going to have to wind this up, but I went to preach a gospel meeting at a little church. This is not the story, but I'll tell you this in passing. They probably had, I got two, boy, what this was a great encouragement. The song leader, two song leaders for that gospel meeting were 14 or under. Both of them. One of them had only been baptized about 2 weeks. Those young men got up and did a marvelous job. And I thought, this church knows how to involve young people early. And there was one lady. Now, remember, it's a small church. And I encouraged, as we always do, you know, bring your friends. Try, get somebody to come. And she said, I think it was Wednesday night. It was Thursday night meeting, too. She said, tomorrow night, I got my friends coming. And she brought 8 people with her to that gospel. She filled up the whole pew. And for some of them, that was the first time they ever heard the gospel preached. They were not religious, or they were religious affiliations other than the New Testament church. That same meeting, there was a preacher meeting about an hour away. And so the preacher asked if I wanted to go and speak, and I did. So we went, and I met the preacher at the church that was hosting it. It's a big church. It was really a neat building because it was built for a YMCA, and then something happened, and their funding fell through or something, and they never used it. And the church bought it. It's a beautiful building and it's constructed differently than our buildings. But it was very conducive to being a welcoming center for first-time guests and so forth. Anyway, we met in the fellowship area. And it's been probably before COVID. So, but I remember this. The preacher didn't tell me this at that congregation. But the preacher that I was riding with over there told me. He said, this church we're going to is about to appoint elders. And the preacher is on a 30-day fast of prayer and study in preparation for that. And I thought, I've not heard of that before. Why haven't I heard of this before? Or why haven't I done this before? You know, those are just little snapshots. If we had more time, it's amazing. It seems to me, and I could be wrong about this, but it seems to me like there is an evangelism revival taking place in Churches of Christ right now. There are literally baptisms every day that I know about, that people send, you know, in text or some other way. We had over 1,000 baptisms with House to House School of Evangelism last year. And at one time earlier this year, I haven't thought to ask lately, we were having 3 baptisms every day on average in that one program. And that's just a little bitty part of what God's people are doing. It's amazing that people are waking up to it. Because you know what COVID did to us? Some good things, some bad things. One thing, it woke us up. It's like, not everybody came back in a lot of churches. And elders are like, we need to do something. And this is not about the person. I'm sure Victor's this way and other preachers. Asked to speak on evangelism three more weekends this year. People are wanting to do more evangelism. That's encouraging, because if you're going to have baptisms, you got to have Bible studies. You're going to have Bible studies, you got to have prospects. If you're going to have prospects, then you got to be talking to people and inviting people. That's where it starts. And if you're going to catch a lot of fish, you got to throw out a lot of lines. You know, you can't just have one little line and hope and think you're going to bring home a lot of fish. You need to have a lot of lines out there. You need to have as many lines as you have members of the congregation. And then one is successful, and then another, and then by and large, before long, you say, wow, there's several new members here. That's encouraging. And then once you see someone that you taught, and I know some of you had this experience many times, but you see someone that you've taught the gospel come up out of the baptistry dripping wet and smiling and come and hug your neck and say, thank you, thank you, thank you. You know what you want to do? You want to go do that again. Because that's the way God made us. Well, our time is gone for this session, but we're going to talk about Luke 15 in the next session. So we will build in some more principles from those three. We'll just look at three of the parables in that chapter. Thank you for your attention and for coming early, and we'll take a minute break, I guess.